Today we hear from award-winning coach Jenny Garrett OBE. Jenny is the author of Rocking Your Role and speaks globally to women all over the world. Jenny is one of those women who gives her time endlessly to the progression of women in the workplace. We're a huge fan. During this session, Jenny will discuss how to handle and manage communication glitches while working from home. She will also explain how to ensure your voice is heard and how to leave a positive and long-lasting impression.
Meetings. This is the biggest time and opportunity we have to speak up, but also one of the most difficult times to be able to speak up as well, because meetings are a pressure cooker microcosm of the workplace. A diverse group of people with their own ideas come together to get the job done. But not everyone's ideas can be taken up, and individual styles and how their styles interact with each other are as influential as the quality of ideas themselves. Importantly, people are getting credit or not getting credit for the contributions to the outcomes. And so meetings are one of our biggest challenges to be assertive, to communicate effectively. And so I'll be talking a lot about meetings today. Within meetings, there's often power and politics going on, people shoving to be heard and to be seen, to say the right thing in front of the right people. And sometimes you can be forgiven for thinking, I'm not going to play that game. I haven't got the energy for this. Let those who want to speak up and be loud and beat their chest carry on, and I'll just get on with it. But that's not the way to think about it, because we miss out, unfortunately, when we do that. Keeping our head down and getting our work done, sadly, is not enough. Because if I ask you, what did you have for breakfast this time last week? Those of you who can answer that question easily are the ones who have the same breakfast every day. And I know that will be a percentage of you, but those who don't won't remember. So if you can't remember what you had for breakfast this time last week, how does your line manager or your colleagues or your senior colleagues in your organization, how are they supposed to remember your contributions, the difference that you make, what you do in your organization? Because we can't remember small details for ourselves, they definitely can't remember the small details when they have a huge span of control. So we have a responsibility to speak up, to be seen, to remind people about what our contribution is. And we do that through often having to be assertive and communicate in meeting situations. Is this familiar to you? This is an excellent suggestion, Miss Triggs. Perhaps one of the men here could make it first, yeah? Would like to make it. Have you had that experience where you've made a point and then a colleague makes the point and suddenly it's an amazing idea, but when you made it, no one seemed to take it on board? It's a very familiar experience of women. You may have come across these terms, man interrupt and bropriate. So the phenomenon is that often men do interrupt women. They unnecessarily interrupt or interrogate us when we make our points, and we find it off-putting, because if you're anything like me as a woman, you were brought up to sit nice and quietly, hands on our lap, knees together, and be a good girl. And actually, when someone interrupts you, instead of maybe saying, stop that, it's out of order, you sit back politely, because that's how you've been taught to be. Being a good girl got you here, but it might not get you there. And sometimes we are going to have to be a little bit more assertive, a little bit more challenging than we would have been previously, because those same skills mean that sometimes we're overlooked. And then the bropriation, the act of taking credit for a woman's idea. So a woman mentions it, then a man mentions it, and he gets the credit, and we sit there seething, wondering why we weren't listened to. This is a very real phenomenon. So if you experience it, know that many other women are experiencing it too. You're not alone, but I'm also going to give you some tools and techniques to overcome it for the future. I want to say, not all men are like this. Of course, you know, we've got men in our lives, men in our families, men in our workplaces who are amazing. It's a small proportion of men who do this. And the ones who do often don't realize that they're doing it. So please forgive them, but doesn't mean that we have to put up with it. The feedback women often get in terms of not speaking up and in terms of their participation in meetings is stop acting like a facilitator and start saying what you stand for. Okay, so don't just facilitate the conversation. It could be point A and it could be point B, but without saying, actually, my stance is C. So too much of just acting like a facilitator can make us seem a bit wishy-washy. We also need to participate in meetings more. And as I've said, sometimes the power and the politics and the dynamics of the meetings can make us feel like we don't want to participate, but we need to. And it could also be around your personality preference as well. Perhaps you're not the person who speaks to think. Perhaps you're a person who thinks first and then speaks. As a result, you might not participate to the same level as others. So sometimes we get this type of feedback. And then also the feedback could be we don't appear to be engaged in meetings as engaged as others do. So why does this happen? The truth is that we are being judged quite differently. For men, if you're highly emotional in the workplace and show your emotional intelligence, often you're seen as weak and ineffectual. And for women, if we're assertive, we might be called the B word or an alpha female. And so we're criticized. So there's this continuum for male and female behavior, which is totally inappropriate because women can be assertive and strong. Men can be emotional and in touch with their feminine side. But actually what happens is we get judged incorrectly depending on where we go on that continuum. So we are all unique people, but unfortunately some behaviors that we exhibit are labeled in a negative way, whatever our gender. If we're too bold, it's not okay. If we're too soft, it's not okay. So we're walking this tightrope, which can be really very difficult and challenging for us. So what are the right things to do? It can be really hard, especially when you know that this has quite deep roots. There's a book that I'd highly recommend by a woman called Deborah Tannen, Talking 9 to 5. And what she says is this all happens very early. Even in primary school, boys start tuning out to the voices of women. They start to hear, apparently, our voices as melody, because of course we are so melodious. No one's heard me singing. I think I make people's ears bleed, but, but apparently this is what happens. Men start to tune out to our voices and have to work harder to tune into what we're saying. But there's also another phenomenon which is important to understand, which is that women are very much taught to be sensitive to the needs of others. They're taught to be very considerate of others. And so what often happens is we hold ourselves back in order to make sure other people are okay. Now, this isn't all women, of course. I don't want to make sweeping statements or all men. But the research shows that actually, if you ask a woman, for example, if she's an undergraduate, how she thinks she'll do in her degree, even if she feels that she'll get a first, she might say, I think I'll get a 2-2 or a 2-1, because she doesn't want someone else to feel bad that they might not get as high a grade as her. So as a result, we kind of hold ourselves back. We don't shine our light brightly. We're very humble in order that other people don't feel bad in our presence. Whereas men don't have that same experience. So as a result, we can hold ourselves back quite a lot. I mean, this is a strength. If you are someone who's sensitive to the needs of others, if you're empathetic, if you're sympathetic, these are wonderful qualities. But overplayed means that there can be, for us, a negative impact. Because ultimately, if I keep downplaying my achievements, people will start to believe me. They won't read between the lines. They won't realize that I'm being highly sensitive to the needs of my colleagues. They'll just think, oh, maybe they're not as good as I thought they were. So what happens? As I've said, we have that experience in meetings. Didn't I just say that? And wondering why someone else is being able to take credit for it? Sometimes it's not what we say, but how we say it. It's good for you to check in on yourself. How do you sound when you are passionate about something and excited? I've definitely been that person who can sound a bit like this. Oh my gosh, it's amazing. This wonderful thing's going to happen. But thinking about what happens in terms of my voice, it becomes very high pitched. People can tune out to that. There is something about, if you really want to be listened to, having the lowest comfortable voice possible. Now, when I say that lowest comfortable voice possible, I don't mean, hi, I'm Jenny, I'm joining this meeting. I don't mean that something that doesn't sound like you. But a low and comfortable voice really does help other people listen to you. And I mentioned the idea also that some people are more introverted and some people are more extroverted. Really, if you are introverted, you get your energy from being alone, you think and reflect before you speak, can be really useful for you to think about how you can contribute in a way that's still powerful in your meetings. You don't have to have as much airtime as your extroverted colleagues, but you can still make a powerful difference. So another book I'd recommend, Susan Cain. Cain is C-A-I-N, and the book is called Quiet. It's about the strength of being an introvert. So for example, I've been part of meetings where someone doesn't speak very much, and they're reflecting, and they're taking in what's being said, but people will turn to them at the end of the meeting for their input. And it's very powerful because they have the last word and they've synthesized what's been said, but also add their own opinion and their own thoughts. So even if you don't have all of the airtime, you can still be silent, but strong and powerful within a meeting. So you don't have to become an extrovert and be uncomfortable and change who you are. I really advocate being you, but being the best you. Sometimes it's not how you say it, but who you are. And I do think when we're thinking about assertive communication, you do have to understand your organizational politics. Are you in a position to say what it is you need to say? Do you need to maybe lobby other people before the meeting and get some people on your side before you say it? Should you perhaps have a quiet word with someone else? And should they be the person who say the thing that you want to say? It doesn't always have to be you. And if you are generally an assertive person, you might find that people become quite lazy and rely on you to always be the devil's advocate, for you to deliver the bad news. You don't want to turn into that person. So I recommend thinking, does it need to be me? Can I encourage someone else to speak up and assert their point of view? Is there more than one way to do this? As I've said, in terms of the research, it can be hard for women to influence men because from a very early age, men are tuning out. But we have to help them recognize that. And I do think there are in the moment interventions we can do to actually say, oh, you seem to have not taken in what I've said here. I might have to repeat it. Sorry, you missed it. You know, giving them the benefit of the doubt. But also, if you leave a meeting and you speak to a male colleague and you say, gosh, did you realize that happened? And then they say, yeah, I noticed that. That wasn't very good, was it? I would encourage them not to be a bystander in the future. So I would say, great that you noticed it too. The next time you see it happen, it would be great if you spoke up. Instead of me always speaking up on my behalf, it would be great if other people back me up. And as you see it too, don't be a bystander. Actually speak up on my behalf also. So get men on your side. There can be unequal opportunities in meetings. The person who speaks loudest might get the most airtime, and it can be hard to muscle into the conversation. I'm going to give you some tips on how to do that. But I also think about the structure of your meetings. Is there a way to go to each person in turn and ask them if they have something to contribute? Is there a way to ask people up front? Is there a particular point that you want to speak on so I can bring you in at that point? So that we make sure that those who want to communicate can do so and can contribute. And it's just this thing about unstructured groups. When it's a bit of a free-for-all, people can give up, and the quietest people sometimes don't get a word in. So thinking about what you can do. I think actually Zoom calls and video calls are good for this, because you can say, everyone mute, I'm going to ask X if they've got a point. Okay, B, you haven't spoken for a while. Have you got something to contribute on this? And I think it's easier in some ways to enable people to actually share and contribute. But you also might say, does anybody want to send me something in writing in advance? There's more than one way to do this. And also rotating the chair of the meeting gives a different dynamic and can also help you in managing and making sure everyone is able to contribute. Sometimes there are alignments. So what might happen is you notice that whenever John says something, Susan always agrees with him. It's useful to notice what those alignments are and maybe get some alignments yourself. However, if you get an alignment with a man, you might find that he always gets the credit, even though he's only backing you up. So it's not always the best thing to do, and not something to rely on. because what will happen is if you rely on it and the person's not there, then your voice won't be heard for the future. So how do you prepare to be heard in meetings? And this is an important meeting. I know we have lots of meetings all the time, and some of them we don't prepare, we just get there and we just get on with it. But if you want to prepare for a meeting, what do you do to prepare? Some people make notes, some people prepare questions, reviewing papers, getting stats together, reflecting on the topic. Understand what outcome you want and need. Now, what do I want to take from being part of this meeting? One of the things I want you to think about is how can you prepare physically? Not just preparing notes, which are very important to do, and preparing to speak, but also you might want to prepare physically, because actually, if it's an important meeting, perhaps you'll be a bit nervous. You know, it takes 3 seconds for someone to make a first impression of you. So if we're preparing to speak, we also want to demonstrate from the minute we walk in that room that we're ready to do so. One of the things I always say is make like a tree. Have your feet firmly rooted and have yourself very upright. You have more gravitas and you take up more space. So I encourage you to do that. I also think when you're in the meeting, as Sheryl Sandberg says, make sure you have your seat at the table. But also a good thing to do is have your arms in a sort of triangular shape. So your elbows are on the table and your arms are out. And by doing that, you're taking up space on the table. And as you take up space on the table, that means you're willing to take up space verbally. If you are nervous, give yourself a good shake before you go into the meeting. Now, before I do public speaking, you can often find me in a toilet cubicle, jumping up and down for a few seconds, getting rid of all of my adrenaline so that I'm ready to speak confidently. So actually, if you're starting to feel nervous, if it's a big meeting, one that you're not normally in, give yourself a good shake. Just jump up and down, get rid of that adrenaline somehow, and walk in purposefully. Don't do that, oh, am I supposed to be here? No, walk in, stride in with purpose. And dress with confidence, whatever that means for you. It might be your favorite earrings, it might be your lucky pants, whatever that is. But dress with that confidence, that thing that makes you feel, yeah, I'm ready to speak and I can do so. And think big voice. If you're at a board table, too often you're thinking about the people either side of you hearing you. Make sure the person furthest away can hear your voice. And I know sometimes for people who don't speak that loudly, that can feel like you're shouting. But afterwards, check it out with people. Say, did I sound like I was shouting? Did I sound like I was projecting too much? Because you just need to get used to the sound of your own voice being a bit louder. The physical preparation helps you to deliver on the notes that you've made, the questions that you want to ask, and the statements that you want to put out there also. You might also need to quieten your mind a bit. Quite often we've got so much on our mind, haven't we? Right now you might be homeschooling, looking after elderly relatives, thinking about how you're going to do the next food shop, as well as juggling work. There will be a lot on your mind and a lot of things to do. You might want to call certain people or do certain things. I encourage you before you go into a meeting to think, okay, this is an important meeting. Maybe I walk around my garden or I walk around the block quickly just to clear my head. Or I write down all the things that are on my mind, put them in my desk drawer so that I can come back to them and park them before the meeting. Know what you want to say and know what you know. This is very important because some of the research says that even when the woman is the expert on a topic in the room, what she does sometimes is let other people speak up on the topic when she is the expert. So know what you know, yeah? I'm the person who should be speaking about this because I'm the expert on this topic. And you might not say it in those words, but you'll find a way to say, this is my field of expertise, or from my very long and varied experience, this is what I believe. And as always, stand by your values and your ethics. You'll like yourself more if you do. This idea of taking a helicopter ride at the top is being able to look down on your situation and think about the dynamics. Think about understanding their motivations, how they interact with other people, so that if you're looking down at this meeting, you'd be noticing patterns of interactions and dependencies between people, which will help you read the room better in order to communicate effectively and assertively. So when you want to be heard, it's good to understand the conversational style. If you're not with your normal group, try and understand the language that people use and the way in which they communicate with each other. Some people are much more formal. Some people are much more informal. Some people use a lot of jargon. Some people really want to stick to time. other organizations don't. I'm working with an organization at the moment, and they say people are always about 7 minutes late for a meeting. This seems to be just part of the way they do things. So I plan for the meetings to start 7 minutes late now. So try and understand, what is the style? What is the way we speak? Be careful of too much self-talk. Oh, what if I speak and I say the wrong thing? What if I don't have anything to contribute? What if I embarrass myself? All of that self-talk takes you away from being able to focus. So think about the outcome you want and focus on that. What do I really want from this meeting? What do I really want to contribute to this meeting? That's very important. And passion really matters. Talk about what you care about, but do it in a nice, calm and even voice. So I want to share with you a tool, and it's called PEP. And actually it comes from a book called The A to Z of Being Understood by Kay White. In her book, she talks about something called PEP, which really stops other people appropriating your ideas. I don't think she intended it for that, but I found when I work with my clients, this works really well. So you make your point, you give three explanations as to why, and then you make your point again. So the point is, I'd really like us in my household to have technology-free Sundays. The reason that I think this would be a really good idea is that actually if we switch off technology, we'll actually talk to each other, which I think is a really good thing. The second is, if we switch off technology, we'll get out and take some exercise, which is really good for us. And the third reason I think it'd be really good is that actually if we have one day without technology, we'll be really fresh on Mondays to start the week and hit the ground running. My point again, I think we really need to have technology-free Sundays. So if you see how it happened there, it flows really easily. I made my point at the beginning and I made my point at the end as well. And you can do this for any point you want to make in a meeting. It works highly effectively for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is that sometimes we make our point and then we talk for too long. We have too much to say. By the time we've said all of the reasons why, the person's forgotten what our original point was. Also, the power of three. Whenever you make three points, it's very memorable. So giving three explanations means that the person will remember it. It also shows that you've thought it through. And to make your point again at the end, what they've found now is that as human beings, our concentration span is even less than a goldfish. It's about 3 seconds, apparently. It's really, really poor. So because they've forgotten the point that you made in the beginning, when you make your point again at the end, they are able to say, oh yes, that's what it was all about. And it consolidates it. But it also stops someone appropriating it. You know, there's no one going to be able to say, that was my point. Because you made the point at the beginning, you gave your three explanations as to why, and then you made your point again. Now, you wouldn't use this in every situation, but in those important meetings where you want to make sure you get your point across, you've got an important point that you don't want anyone appropriating, I encourage you to use PEP. And it's something I just keep in the back of my notepad to remind me it's there. Or sometimes I prepare my PEP in advance. Now, you might say, well, I've got 100 reasons why this is a good idea. That's fine. This is piquing their interest. They can ask you to tell them more or say, I want to know more about that. Please write a paper on it or come and see me. Or we'll put it as a full agenda item at the next meeting. So it doesn't mean that you have to say everything all in one go. Have three key points that you want to share succinctly, and then it can lead to you elaborating on that some more. So take away PEP. It's an excellent tool. It really helps you assertively communicate. So find a buddy, a friend, a colleague, even your partner, and just try it with them. Have a go. See what you notice about the impact of the approach and think about when it can be helpful. And what I encourage you to do, if you feel a bit uncomfortable, because often people say, I feel really uncomfortable making my point again at the end, ask the person how they felt when you did it. Ask them if it felt uncomfortable to them, if it felt like overkill. My experience is that people say, no, it didn't at all. You know, I almost didn't notice that you said it twice because it was helpful to round it off. So I encourage you to try it and ask for some feedback on trying this approach. But it's a great thing that you can prepare before a meeting. Now, the other thing to do is think about where you sit. If you want to be heard and assertively communicate, you need to be able to be seen by the person who's leading the meeting. You might sit opposite them, so you're in their direct eye line, or you might sit next to them. Now, you don't have to do this in every meeting. years ago, I worked with a colleague and he would always sit next to the boss, nodding and smiling at the boss. It was really annoying. I don't encourage you to do that. But when it's an important meeting and you do have the opportunity to sit in the same room as someone, not that we do at the moment, but when that opportunity comes again, think about making sure that you're in their eye line or next to them so that they notice when you want to make a point. And, you know, just think about how you do that in the Zoom meetings now. Do you wave a hand to let someone know that you have something to contribute? I know that some tools you can press hands up and speak in that way. Create some sort of protocol that means that people can show that they want to contribute and they want to make a point. I encourage you to be aware of the double bind, to monitor your own communication and think about, actually, I don't want to be too soft and I don't want to be too assertive. I want to find the right way to communicate in this context. So think about how you might be able to do that. I really want to say you don't need to be changed or fixed, but all of us do need to flex and adapt our approach in organisations. But we might also be needing to hold up a mirror to organisations to say, it's the loudest person gets heard in meetings. That's probably not going to get the best for our team. How else can we do this? And also, actually, just because someone delivers a point confidently doesn't mean it's a competent point. So we've got to be careful not to value confidence over competence and make sure that everyone's voice is heard and not value extroversion over introversion, because again, both are equally valid. Take opportunities to show up and speak is my recommendation. If you find it difficult, whenever there's an opportunity, do it. Challenge yourself to speak and speak quickly, because the longer you leave it, someone else might make your point. Alternatively, what might happen is that you just get so nervous that by the time you've got to say it, you've built yourself into a frenzy. So if you get it out of the way easily and quickly, then you can relax and just enjoy the meeting. And you might also want to get some help and support. So you might speak with a colleague and buddy up with them, or you might engage someone like me, a coach or a mentor or your sponsor or a career counselor, to try and help you to think about how you can more assertively contribute in the meeting setting. So I want to share with you another tool, and this is muscular language. And it comes from a great article called Women Find Your Voice. That's a Harvard Business Review article by Heath Flynn and Davis Holt. They interviewed about 2,000 senior women, and they found these women said it's harder to read the room if there are no other women at the table. And I'd say even if there are three women at the table and there's 10 of you in total, it can be still hard to read the room. We need at least three women in the room for it to be easier for us. And what they suggest is that you master the pre-meeting. So before the meeting starts, don't just get there on time, get there early if there are some conversations being had in advance. Or if there now might be some informal conversations going on before the meeting, maybe via WhatsApp or Messenger, or if you use Yammer in your organization, if there's some other conversation happening before the meeting, make sure you take part in that. Keep an even keel. Even if someone says something that is conflictual, that you take personally, try not to show that emotion. Just try to be even and prepare to speak up. So what they say in terms of the muscular language is that often we might start sentences like this. How about we do this? Or I tend to agree on that point. I think maybe we could try. Or I agree, that's a fantastic point. Or maybe we can. Or well, what if? Now, if you're in a meeting and it's very equal, people listen to you, you don't have any problems, you don't need to assertively speak up, then these are all absolutely fine ways to start your sentence. They're absolutely fine and they work well. However, if you are in a minority in the meeting, if you find it sort of macho, fast-paced, really aggressive, and you're finding it really difficult to muscle into the conversation, then I want to give you some alternatives. So instead of how about, you'd say, I strongly suggest. Can you hear the difference in terms of assertive communication here? Instead of I tend to agree, this is absolutely right, and here's why. Instead of I think maybe, my strong advice is, and this is my favorite, maybe we can, here is my plan. And lastly, well, what if, I recommend. So this is when it's a difficult situation. Maybe you feel that the meeting's going on and you've got something to contribute, but you just can't find a way to muscle in. This is the way to do it. And again, what I do is I have these sentence openers on the right-hand side in the back of my notebook for those specific instances. And when it happens, I open it up and I draw on them, and they really do work. Another way of challenging when you want to be assertive, but you don't want to create conflict, is to use the acronym TED. T for tell me, E for explain, D for describe. So what you say is, tell me more about that. Can you explain to me in more detail your thinking? Can you describe how that might work in practice? So this is a way of being assertive and challenging, but doing it from a curious stance. And when you do it from that stance, you don't get any pushback because the people don't become defensive. So again, tell me, explain, describe. This is a way of being challenging and assertive, but also being curious. And it helps people to justify where they're coming from, helps you to get more of a picture of what their thinking is without saying, yeah, I completely disagree with you, that's absolute rubbish. You get them to describe it, explain it, tell you more about it. And hopefully they come to that conclusion for themselves. So my final tips for you, lower your voice and project your voice. Go to the person who's the furthest in the room. That's who should be willing to hear you. If you are experiencing some challenges, I encourage you not to take it personally. Try to stick to your point. Don't back down if you feel that you're right, but don't take it as a personal affront. Typically, it's not. Someone might be arguing with your point, or they might be arguing with your role, but they're not usually personally attacking you. So try and just detach yourself from it a little bit, but stick to your point. Humor can be a great icebreaker, but use it with care. Some people are absolutely fantastic at using humor to diffuse situations. Someone tries to, you know, get you to take the notes or pour the tea at a meeting. Some people have those amazing comebacks. Some people find that more difficult. If you're the person who has the amazing comebacks, then use them. Use humor where you can. It can definitely diffuse a situation, but use it with care and make sure that it's not putting anyone else down. And when we're trying to be assertive and establish ourselves as an authority, if you've tried a lot of these tips and they don't work for you, sometimes what you can do is go in to go out. So there's a woman called Anna Ride, whose online credibility spilled out into the real world through a blog. If you feel boxed in and you're trying to be assertive and you're trying to communicate differently, people aren't taking it on board in your organization, I recommend you go out. So you might speak, you might write a blog, you might write articles, you might try and get an award. Do something in your field, in your sector, in your profession that gives you a bit of credibility. And then your organization can often start to listen. It's a little bit like dating. You know, if your partner sees someone else noticing you, they buck their ideas up. The same can happen with an organization. However, if you do that and you get external credibility and notoriety and your organization still doesn't recognize you and enable you to be assertive and listen, well, it's likely that you'll get other opportunities as a result anyway. Someone will be attracted to you that does appreciate what you have to offer. So some final tips, make stew but serve only meat. What I mean by that is use something like PEP, where you get to the heart of the matter when you're making your points. Because when you do that, actually, people really are more likely to listen to you and really you're more able to assert your point. And when someone does make a point, say yes and rather than yes, but. Because as soon as you say but, people forget what you've said before that and they only hear but and they think they need to defend their point. So yes, that's a really good point. I think that could work in practice. And I also think we might need to think about this. Rather than, yes, that's a really good point. I think it could work in practice, but etc. They stop listening then. They only hear what comes from the but. So try and use ands rather than buts.
Wow, Jenny, I could absolutely listen to you for hours. That was incredible. I cannot thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. If you want to find out more about Jenny, you can connect with her on LinkedIn or you can follow her on Twitter. Jenny also runs a fantastic program called Happenistas. Go and check it out. So a huge thank you to you all once again for listening. We really appreciate it. Hope you'll join us next Wednesday when we release a new episode of She Talks Tech.